This is a Rabble Podcast Network show.
Rabble.ca.
Hi, I'm Wayne McPhail, and I was one of the people that originally started the Rabble Podcast Network, and I think that you should support the Rabble Podcast Network and Rabble.ca because there's no other place where you're going to get such a diversity of voices speaking truth to power.
The Rabble Podcast Network is 10 years old this year. Show your support by going to rabble.ca/donate.
You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
This week marked the final week of a series of public meetings on Kinder Morgan's proposal to triple the capacity of its Trans Mountain pipeline. A three-member panel conducted 15 days of meetings in 11 municipalities around the province. They held a combination of public town hall meetings and round tables for local government, NGOs, First Nations, and other sectors. Sven Biggs was one of a team of people attending the meetings on behalf of STAND, formerly Forest Ethics. Sven joins me by phone this morning to give us an assessment of what happened at the meetings and his assessment of the impact it will have on the Liberal government's final decision on Kinder Morgan expected in December. Hello, Sven.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, we're very happy to have you here. How did these meetings come about?
Well, this is a result of the promise that Justin Trudeau made during the last election campaign to reform the National Energy Board and start the Kinder Morgan process over again. Unfortunately, he didn't go all the way to starting it over again. Instead, came up with this kind of supplementary hearing process that attempt to deal with some of the shortcomings in the National Energy Board process.
And it was a three-member panel. Who was on the panel?
Tony Pennicott, who is the former premier of the Yukon, Kim Baird, who's the former chief of the Tawasin First Nation, and Annette Trembe, who is the president of the University of Winnipeg.
So these would be federal Liberal supporters, would you say?
Yeah, all of them have connections in the past to the Liberal Party. I think they were looking for kind of a panel that were safe hands to guide this through and wouldn't give them any surprises.
And I understand that Kim Baird had some kind of prior connection with Kinder Morgan.
Yeah, she did a leadership exchange with Ian Anderson, who's the president of Kinder Morgan Canada. Effectively, she ran Kinder Morgan Canada for 6 days as part of this project.
Now, I said that there were both roundtables and town hall meetings. What's the difference there?
The difference to the roundtables, they invited, in some cases, folks from different sectors. So there was First Nations roundtables, local government roundtables, business roundtables, roundtables for nonprofit groups. However, in the end, they did a really bad job of inviting folks to those roundtables, especially the First Nations and local government ones. So in some communities, the First Nations and local governments were invited by activists and organizers like ourselves instead of the panel.
I understand that you guys got an invitation too. Stan got an invitation.
We did get an invitation, and we presented at the NGO Roundtable in Vancouver last week. It was an interesting opportunity and gave us a chance to raise some points that weren't included in the NEB process. But ultimately, we're concerned about what kind of report will come out of this process.
And at the public meetings, people could just go to the meetings and speak? Was that the process?
Yeah, it was relatively open. Anyone could show up and sign up to speak. The real problems with the town halls were, they weren't very well advertised by the federal government, so a lot of people didn't know that they were happening. They all happened in August, which is a tough time to get people out to public meetings or consultations. And a lot of them happened during the work week, during work hours. So fewer people could attend, which was all very frustrating for communities that are impacted by the pipeline.
So what kind of concerns came up in the different communities?
Well, it kind of changed as we moved along the pipeline route. We heard a lot of concerns about wild salmon in Kamloops when we visited there. In the Fraser Valley communities, we heard a lot of concerns about drinking water. The pipeline goes through many drinking watersheds in those communities. In Burnaby, we heard a lot about the tank farm and the risk of a fire to the surrounding neighborhoods. And in Vancouver and Victoria, we heard much more about tanker accidents and the risk of a spill, what that would do to our coastal economy.
And what kind of proportion was there between people speaking in favor of the pipeline and people speaking against the pipeline?
Well, at the town hall meetings in Burnaby, Victoria, and Vancouver, 100% of the people that spoke were opposed to the pipeline. Overall, we tracked every speaker that spoke at both the roundtables and the town halls, and 91.4% of the people spoke against the pipeline.
That's pretty impressive amount of opposition there.
It definitely is. And one of Justin Trudeau's other promises during the campaign is that he wouldn't force projects like these on communities where the social license didn't exist. He said that governments issue permits, but only communities can give permission. Well, it's pretty clear from these consultations that our communities don't give their permission to this pipeline.
Do we know how the panel is going to present all the concerns that they heard in their report?
Well, so we know what they're not doing. They've made that clear. They're not going to make a recommendation the way the National Energy Board did back in May. They're not conducting an environmental assessment, and they're not looking at scientific evidence. But what they are going to do is a little vague. They weren't taking official records or transcripts of what was said at the meeting. And they've suggested things like they have to include the voices of the silent majority that didn't come to their consultations, which I'm not sure how you would even begin to do that.
So you have consultations, but then you include the voices of people who don't come to the consultations?
They did suggest at one meeting that they were going to try to do that. And I'm not sure what they meant by that or how they plan to accomplish it, but it's kind of baffling.
So there was no recordings, there was no record. So how are they going to write their report?
Well, they took notes, and they had a professional note taker in the room. But unlike the National Energy Board or a regular federal tribunal, where those notes become public and part of a record that folks can go back to, that's not happening in this case. So what we believe is they have kind of impressions from the meetings, and they're going to try to put those into themes and come up with some sort of report on some of the things they heard. But when they were asked things like, are you going to reflect the fact that overwhelming opposition at these meetings, they said, well, probably not.
So people were actually asking them questions about how the report was going to be presented or what they were going to say?
Yeah, there was a lot of concern when folks started to figure out kind of that there wasn't going to be a recommendation and there weren't official records taken. There was a lot of concern. And people really wanted to know after kind of the Harper years that this government is different and is taking them seriously. And the people left, I think, with more concerns than they came with.
When is the report going to go to Cabinet?
So there's a deadline to submit this report by November 1st, and then Cabinet has a deadline to make a decision on the permit by December 19th.
And I understand that people can still have input to the panel. How would they do that?
Yeah, so there's also an online part of this consultation. So many of the groups that it's kind of hard to find on the government website. So groups like ours have set up our own ways to submit letters online on our website. So you can go to stand.earth to find ours, but many of the groups working on the Kinder Morgan campaign will have similar actions on their website.
So let's turn to look at the kind of calculations that the federal Liberals are making at this point about Kinder Morgan. What's your sense?
Well, I sense for them that this is a very political decision. We've heard through kind of back channels from the Liberal Party that they feel like they need to approve a pipeline, whether that's Energy East or Kinder Morgan, it's unclear. Although we've heard also rumors that they feel like Kinder Morgan is less politically complicated for them, that they have trouble with their Quebec caucus and the Quebec provincial government, and the mayor of Montreal recently came at calling for an end to the hearings on energy. So all of that complicates them on their eastern pipeline. They're looking more seriously at Kinder Morgan. Unfortunately, the science and the environmental impacts are not at the top of their mind right now, and that's very concerning for us.
And do the back channels tell us why they feel they need to say yes to one of the pipelines?
Well, it's kind of classic liberal thinking. They want to split the difference between the environmental community and the industry and give everybody something they wanted without giving anyone everything they wanted. They also want to demonstrate that they're kind of better at delivering for industry than the past government, who, although was very pro-oil, didn't actually deliver much for them in the end, because their kind of take-no-prisoners style created a lot of opposition.
So it sounds like the calculation is, can they get away with saying yes? What's it going to take to convince them that they cannot get away with saying yes to Kinder Morgan?
Well, I think we here on the West Coast that are concerned about this pipeline need to let all of our elected officials, especially if you live in a riding with a Liberal MP, know that you want to see this pipeline rejected and that you are willing to do things like come out to protest or change the way you vote in the next election because of the decision on this pipeline.
And what role would First Nations court challenges play in this?
Well, they play a huge role. First Nations, in the last decade, 94% of the challenges to resource projects brought by First Nations have been successful. And, of course, that was the kind of final nail in the coffin for the Enbridge pipeline, was the successful legal challenge from First Nations. Already seven nations here in the Lower Mainland and along the pipeline route have launched challenges to the NEB decision. We expect similar legal challenges to any cabinet decision. And our First Nations allies are going to need lots of support from the broader community to make that happen. Those cases cost millions of dollars, and those communities have to cut back on other services to make those cases happen.
It just seems to me supremely ironic that the poorest communities in our province have to spend millions of dollars to protect the rest of us from pipelines.
It really is, and I am constantly overwhelmed by the sacrifices First Nations leaders make for the rest of us in many cases.
Now, the other route that is taken against pipelines is direct action. Are you anticipating that people will take that route?
Well, we heard many people, including the mayor of Burnaby, stand up at the hearings and say that if they try to build this thing, they're willing to get arrested. So I think that if the government tries to push ahead, there is no question that there will be more arrests. We saw over 100 arrests, of course, at Burnaby Mountain. And we're definitely headed in that direction again if the Liberals don't course correct soon.
Well, thank you so much for talking to me this morning, Sven.
No problem. It was great to be on the show.
I've been speaking with Sven Biggs. He's a campaigner with STAND, formerly Forest Ethics, and you can follow this issue on their website, stand.earth.